Hello and welcome to Starts and Grafts. I'm Conagher Fogg and each week I'm joined by an emerging artist to discuss the highs and lows of forging a creative career amidst a global pandemic. This week I'm joined by Ruby Samuel, a Nigerian photographer based in London. Despite the physical restrictions of COVID-19, she's remained innovative and has created some incredibly stunning and personal work that I'm looking forward to hearing more about. Ruby, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. Where are you recording from today, Ruby?
My home in Olympia.
Where is Olympia? I'm guessing that's in London.
Yeah. So it's West London. It's kind of in between Hammersmith and Kensington.
Ah, so like Olympia, Kensington Olympia tube station.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So you're the first photographer that we've had on the podcast. So it's very much new ground and there's a lot for me to learn through this conversation. But I'm really looking forward to finding out about your process and inspirations. So for those people listening that aren't familiar with your work, how would you describe it and the style behind the work that you create?
Oh God, first of all, no pressure. So I mainly shoot on analog, but every now and then like I drift into digital, but I primarily shoot analog. And I would kind of describe my work as a personal outlet, if you will. Like I often describe as like a form of therapy, because like my main subjects and topics always kind of based on something that's kind of personal to me, and I've just used photography as a way to discover it further, whether that be like learning about like my own heritage and culture and how that ties in with like another culture, or delving more into like my sexuality or my religion. Like I kind of use photography to explore that further.
I mean, one of my questions later on was going to be, how important is it that you reflect upon personal aspects of yourself in your work? But I think you've just answered that already, which is fantastic. Therapy is like a really strong term to use, I think. Is that how deep you really reflect inwards when creating?
Yeah, like I think that all of my projects have kind of stemmed from something that I have experienced or I have kind of witnessed.
Sure.
And I find it easier. So like normally when I shoot, I kind of like write first,
okay,
just like to write out my feelings and how whatever the subject is. And then I kind of think, oh, how can I make this a nicer process for me? Or how can I kind of come to peace with whatever this issue is? And I do that through photography. One of my ongoing projects called LBR kind of looks at the female body and how it's kind of viewed by the outsiders, especially in terms of a black female body. And, you know, like growing up in a very Western world and being the only black girl in a lot of settings, I was often confused why no one liked me, or like if they did, like why did they like me kind of thing. And black bodies are fetishized quite a lot in the media. So it really took me aback when I was young, and I just didn't really understand my own self as like a sexual being. And so I looked at prominent people in my life and how I kind of see them in like the nude, and explored that by taking nudes of them.
Yeah.
And I continue to do so with other black women that I meet and I find inspiring.
I've seen some of the images on your website, which are incredibly intimate and personal and detailed. There's a real intricacy to them, which is incredible. So let's talk about quickly your heritage. You were brought up in London,
yeah,
but your family is Nigerian.
Yeah, so born and raised in London, okay, to two Nigerian parents.
I'm looking forward to talking about that a little bit later on, and your parents linked to a specific project that you did. But you highlighted 2019 as being a really pivotal year for you in terms of growth on a personal and an artistic level. Can you give me an idea of some of the projects that you've been working on prior to the pandemic?
Yeah, so at the beginning of 2019, I went back to Nigeria. So I went to Nigeria in 2018 for like a family wedding, and it was the first time I'd been back like since, I feel like, early high school. So like I didn't really have any like adult recollection of it. And like, obviously going back for a wedding is just like straight good vibes. Like you just go to see family, like you're just eating the whole time. And it was like so much fun. I was like, I really want to go back, but like not just to visit family. Like I want to explore it for myself.
Not so leisurely, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like when going back to Nigeria, because like you've got so much family there, like you have to see like this person, that person, this person. And I was like, what's the perfect excuse for me not to have to see everyone? So I thought, why don't I like try and shoot? And then I had the idea to kind of host a photography workshop because two of my aunties own schools there. So that's essentially what I did. And what started as just, you know, something to get me out of just like visiting like everyone I know turned into like a really actually like deep project, because then it kind of forced me to think like, oh, why am I doing this? And then I was like, oh, but like if I grew up in Nigeria, like I know that there's certain aspects of my life that wouldn't be the same, but would I have pursued photography or would I even pursue something creative?
Mm.
And like, why wouldn't I? So then, yeah, it just kind of forced me to look at my childhood and, you know, the opportunities that I've had and why others haven't had that opportunity. But yeah, that was the main kind of project that kind of kept me going through 2019, I'd say.
Is this Omo Nigeria?
That is correct.
Cool. Right, let's talk about that then, because I love this project and I've loved stalking it online. One thing that is really personal to you, like we said, is your sense of identity and nationality. Leading into that project, I read that you talked about your childhood and a sense that everybody knew your story before you got the chance to write it.
Mm.
Can we unpick that a little bit?
Yeah, no, of course. I feel like a lot of the time, especially like with just stereotypes in general, everyone kind of thinks that they know who you are, or like they kind of know the path that you're going to go down, whether that be where you're from geographically, or like as in like where you live. And I just felt like there was just always like a lot of pressure for me to be a certain way, whether that be the way I talk, the way I dress, or like my interests. And they were always like completely wrong. And so I felt like everyone literally knew my story in quotation marks, but like they'd kind of like written my life for me before I even got the chance to. It wasn't pressure, but it was just the assumptions that you kind of felt like you always have to fit into, but like I don't want to.
Yeah, you have to conform to the expectations that people have to you.
Yeah.
It's such a bizarre feeling. And I can't imagine it on the levels that you experienced it.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I've forgotten what the first question was.
No, it was just, we were just talking about this idea of story and people writing it for you. So the motive behind the project was to go into these schools and not only photograph them on one aspect, but also give them the chance to take photographs themselves?
Yeah, so the initial project was literally just to go in. I went with like a bunch of clothes, like old clothes from myself, and picked up some clothes from my friends. I kind of taught them the whole like idea of putting together like a fashion story, like what to think of, like I taught them about like different angles to use and like perspective and like how to portray like a relationship in a photograph. And then like I took them into a room where I had all the clothes and I was like, now that they've thought of the story, pick some clothes that will match your story. And then essentially went to like pick different locations around the school and like shoot it themselves on disposables. And it was, so I wasn't actually supposed to shoot any of the kids.
Right.
I was just going there just so that they could shoot their own stuff. And then like, I would just see how it turns out. Like I had no intention to get it published. I had no intention for like anything. I was just like, this is just something fun that I want to do. And then when I was waiting for them to like get changed or something, some of the kids had just like woken up from their nap.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, they're just so precious. And then I started taking portraits of them. So I kind of like fell into it and I'm so glad I did. But yeah, no, the initial thing was just for them to, you know, experience shooting and like have a good time.
So why was it so important for you to self-fund and deliver that project yourself?
Well, really, I just didn't think anyone would give me the money to do it.
Fair enough.
Like, I didn't think that, like, it would be an option. And, like, I could fund it myself. And I thought, like, well, why the hell not? But last year, I actually wanted to run it again and try and get funding for it and just do it on, like, a bigger scale. Because when I went, I think I just went with, like, Kodak disposables. Whereas if I were to do it again, the plan was to get, like, reusable film cameras so that they can shoot it on that day, but then also keep the camera so that they can like shoot whenever they want.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, initially I was just like, well, no one else is going to pay for it, so I've got to. And also, like I said, like I just didn't think it was going to be as big as it was. Like I thought it was just going to be like something to do whilst I was away.
I love it. And like you said, there's two aspects to it. There's the aspect of the pictures that you took, which incredibly captures the sense of individual within each child, I feel. I mean, I don't know if that was an aim that you had, but the second aspect, which is the pictures and the workshop that they did themselves, and there's such an innate sense of creativity within them and the way that they've staged them.
Yeah.
I want to ask, how readily available are arts education opportunities within Nigeria, and kind of what is the view towards creative careers?
So, like, obviously, like, I'm based in London, so I only know of Nigeria from, like, what I kind of see online.
Yeah.
And there's this photographer that I love called Stephen Tayo. He's just incredible. And, like, he studied, like, psychology or, like, philosophy at uni in Nigeria. But now he's, like, renowned as, like, a photographer there, and, like, everyone loves him. So I feel like stigma has changed, but I feel like it's very much still, like, you know, you grow up, you get your education, you get your degree in something academic, and then if you want to pursue something creative, like, go for it. But I still feel like there is, like, parents just like to know that security, like, their child has a backup. Like, I even remember my mum was very supportive and was just like, if you want to do photography, do photography. Whereas my dad was very much like, it would be good if you just go to uni, you should just go. And I was always like, I just don't really think it's for me. And he'd be like, oh, but like, it's good to just go. And like, even some of my aunties now are very much like, we're so happy for you, but like, get a degree. I'm like, don't need one. Like, but it's just good to have. Like, I think they're still very much on this idea, like, you know, education is key, which it completely is, but like, degrees are the holy grail for them, I think.
But arts education should play into that mainstream education, right?
Exactly. And I think that some people just don't think it's as serious. Mm. And I assume maybe it's just because there isn't that much security, like, within the arts. Like, you could even say now with the impact of COVID, like, not that many, like, it's loads of artists that haven't been able to kind of provide for themselves. Loads of artists kind of like fell in the rut of nothing to do, essentially, whereas, you know, the doctors, they're still working, kind of thing.
Definitely. So what do you think is the driving force behind that change in attitudes that you said's kind of coming into play at the moment?
I think they just need to see more and more people be successful and see that, you know, it can be a long-lasting career.
Mm.
I think it's just, yeah, they just need to see it play out, and then they'll kind of be like, okay.
Right.
I think it's just because it's still kind of new, and it's still a very much quote-unquote Western job. And in like Nigeria, there are like loads of photographers, don't get me wrong, but they're primarily wedding photographers, which is like such a big industry. But the idea of like fashion photographers is still quite, it's still like a new thing. So I think the more it's seen, the more it'll be appreciated, and then the more it'll be accepted.
Well, let's talk about your success. We talked about the project, you know, based in Nigeria, but also prior to the pandemic, you'd featured in like exhibitions in the UK, France, and Nigeria. Like, tell me about some of those and how those opportunities came about.
So the one in France, it was actually my friend's parents who, so random, like, I went round to like drop something off to my friend, but she wasn't in, it was just her parents, and I ended up staying there for like 3 hours.
A piece of work?
No, I think it was like she'd bought something from my work, so I was just dropping around like clothes or something. It was really, really random.
Right.
But she wasn't there, so I ended up talking to her parents for like 3-4 hours, just about like photography and like everything. Like, it was really cool, and like I showed them some of my work, and both her parents are kind of in the creative industry, and they've kind of like taken me underneath their wings as like my unofficial mentors. And it was actually her parents that sent me a submission link to the exhibition in France. Yeah, and so I sent in my work and it got accepted. And like my first exhibition was in Nantes in France. And I was like, what the hell?
Kind of taken over on a global scale. How nice of them to kind of have your back and take you under their wing. Have they been working in the creative industry for some time then?
Yeah, they both have. But like, I think they're the biggest blessing in disguise. Like, they've helped me so much throughout my career. And like I said, like, it's just because like they're nice people and they have seen like my passion and just want me to succeed. So they're always sending me like submissions or like grant applications, which is amazing because I just don't think to look for things. They've just been super, super helpful. Shout out to Sean and Carol.
Love that. I love hearing people that are rooting for others. Did you get to go to any of the exhibitions? For example, the one in France?
No, I didn't actually go to the one in France. I don't know why. But no, I didn't go, but the organisers like sent pictures of it all. It was like an outdoor exhibit. They sent pictures and it looks really cool.
Because, you know, 2019, this pivotal year, bit of a turning point. I speak to a lot of performers on the podcast and it's really obvious how COVID has affected them. But I'm really interested to find out how it's affected you as a visual artist and what your experience has been over the last 12 months. See, I don't want to, that's a broad question, so I don't just want to leave it with that. I'll follow that up. For example, do you have the facilities and the equipment that you need at hand to keep making work when everything else is shut down?
So I try not to buy off Amazon. So when it came to like film, I was like, God, this is the only place I can buy from. And then also everything was like selling out as well super quick, or like the prices were just stupid high. Sometimes of like buying film, like that was possible. I just had to get it off Amazon. But in terms of getting my film developed, there's one place that I really, really like to get my film developed. And they were only processing C41 for like 35mm. But I also shoot on 120mm on a medium format, and they weren't processing that during COVID just because I assume they didn't have the time to do it.
Right, okay.
So that was a bit of a bummer. So I had to like look around. And also I feel like once you've kind of got a lab that you like working with, it's hard to move to someone else just because like you don't trust them, or like if anything goes wrong, I feel like my immediate response would be like to blame the lab instead of like to blame myself, which is bad.
It's kind of like that link that everyone says when they, like guys always say about cheating on their barber.
On the barber.
I don't know if that's...
Yeah. It's exactly like that. But I was forced to cheat. Yeah. So like in terms of like access to like getting film and developing film, like I could do it, but it was just a bit more of a hassle than normal. But in terms of like actually producing work, I feel like I really thrive in other communities and essentially like outside of London and outside of everything that I know, just because it forces me to learn more and then develop my ideas further. So it was a bit of a bummer. So I'd planned to go back to Nigeria last October I planned to go back to Nigeria and do the workshop again, but obviously couldn't go. And then I was actually supposed to go back to Cuba. So I went to Cuba in 2019, maybe it was. 2018 or 2018, I can't remember. I went one summer and had like an amazing, I went by myself, had a really amazing time, and met a family in Matanzas who were just great. And I've kept in contact with them ever since. And like, I've just got such an amazing idea in my head that I just need to like go and execute. And I was planning to do that last summer, but of course COVID, I couldn't. So like in terms of actually creating, I felt like it kind of forced me to think more like local, which I haven't ever had to do before. Like, of course, with the nudes like that, I can do that anywhere. But I feel like that's kind of different because I need the right person. I need one to be within 2 meters of them, which I can't do. And like also like I just need, you know, just like time and space and to have that moment. But that was hard as well. So it kind of forced me to think different.
So a quick question about projects like going to Cuba. Mm. And you really enjoy visiting new places, which is brilliant. I don't know if this is too personal, but do you have to self-fund those projects, or is there funding sources out there for you to pursue when wanting to deliver something abroad?
I don't know. Like, I'm sure there are funding projects, but
yeah.
I'm a bit lazy when it comes to applications. Like, they're always so long. I feel like I'm really bad at, like, selling myself as an artist. So I normally, like, don't bother, which is terrible. And I just think, like, it's just, if I just save the money and go myself, it's easier. And then also, I feel like it takes the pressure off me producing something. So, like, whenever I went, like, last year or the year before, I feel like if that was funded, and then I came back knowing that, you know, what I've shot this time around, like I love, but I'm not crazy about it. But I know if I go again, I've got a better idea. I would have felt like, oh my God, like someone's given me all this money to do this and I'm not happy with the work. I feel like that's just too much pressure for me. So I'd rather do it myself, just so I know that I'm not potentially letting anyone down, so to speak.
So for most creatives this year, like, having steady work and a steady income has been really difficult. Have you had something to turn to that's been able to keep you going?
Yeah, so I actually have like a 9 to 5. I work as a retoucher for an online fashion retailer.
Okay.
I think I was furloughed for like 3 weeks or something, and then I was like back to work. So like in terms of lockdown affecting my employment, I think I probably worked harder than I have in my entire life. And I hate it. Like, I feel like I used to just fanny about at work, like watch films. I was learning like Spanish at one point. But ever since the pandemic, like, I've actually been working 8:30 to 6:30. And I'm like, oh my God, when can I retire? So I've been like fortunate. I'm glad that I've obviously got a job to lean back on, but I've been fortunate enough, I've been working the whole time. But I feel like that has put a strain on like my creative work in terms of photography, just because like I work Monday to Friday, and then when the weekend comes, I'm glad that I don't have to socialize because I physically cannot. Like, I'm so tired, like I don't even have time to, I don't know, like do anything, let alone shoot. And then even like mentally, I'm like I can't think. All I want to do is just like close my eyes until Monday.
Has it been quite weird then, because you've just talked about that 9 to 5 as being something which you kind of quote fannied about during prior to the pandemic, so you could pursue lots of other opportunities, whether that's Duolingo or kind of shooting different projects. Has it felt like a weird shift that's now kind of become at the forefront of what you do because of the pandemic?
Yeah, 100. I think it's so weird, and also, yeah, because it's kind of changed my direction completely. Because prior to the pandemic, I was very much like, I've got this job, one, because I'm like good at retouching, and two, to like fund what I actually want to do. So like, it was very much like I wasn't thinking about it, I was just kind of doing it. Whereas now, I've kind of got more responsibility at work, it's kind of flipped the table, and I'm like, whoa, now I've got more responsibility, like maybe I should kind of pursue this for the long term, like, and just keep photography as a hobby rather than trying to just use this job to fund like a lifestyle and a career that I want to do freelance. Like, now I feel like I'm really like confused.
It's a full 180.
Honestly, like, it's just something I just was never, well, I'm sure no one was prepared for it, but I'm just like, what the hell? Like, I thought I was just going to, you know, go freelance in a couple of years, but now I'm like, but I'm doing really well. Maybe I should continue down like the corporate path. I don't know.
It's weird, isn't it? What does retouching actually entail, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, no, of course. So it's just photo editing, essentially. And even with my own photography, like I don't retouch that much, but like I'll clean up sometimes, especially with like the nudes. If someone has a tattoo that they don't want shown, I can get rid of that, or like to adjust lighting. My day job, so it's like an e-commerce site. So we edit the images for the e-commerce website, whether that be like cutting out mannequins or like bag shots, or like, I'm making it sound really dull. It's just like editing, I say, not like Visco cam or anything, but like as in like Photoshop editing kind of thing.
So has fashion always been really important to you then? It sounds like it has.
Yeah, like when I was younger, like first I wanted to be a psychologist, and then I wanted to be a model, because I just used to watch America's Next Top Model the whole time. And then I realized I just was not tall enough. And also, like, I really hate pictures and like just being in front of the camera. So I kind of went to photography instead. And actually, like, my first kind of experience with photography, me and my friend won a competition. It was like with this family photographer. She was just doing like, I don't know what it was, like a free like model shot kind of thing. And me and my friend won it. And we went to somewhere really random, like Twickenham, and did this photo shoot with this photographer. And it was really cool. We like dressed up, like she proper like glammed us up and like got these photographs printed for us. And I was like, wow, we look so hot.
How old are you at this point?
My God, like 12 or something stupid. I literally don't know. And we were like, wow, like this is so great. Like, gonna put it on Facebook. Love it. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this woman has like not only made me feel fabulous, but just made me look so beautiful. And I was like, I want to do this for everyone. And then I was just like to my parents, please, I need a camera so bad. Like, I really, really need it. Like, I really, really need it. And then they were like, okay. And then I would just take my camera everywhere, like to the park on the weekends. I've even like forced my friends to like pose in like Richmond Park. And like pose in like their bedrooms, like get a backdrop. I was obsessed.
So when did you start to become creative with it and really appreciate it as an art form?
Oh God, I don't feel like that was until like much later when I had like actual sense. I feel like at the beginning I was just like, this is so cool, like pictures, whatever. like more content for Facebook.
I love that. I love that it's fueled by social media.
Oh, it's terrible. But can you imagine, like, just like bratty little kids.
Who wasn't, though, at 12?
But just like bratty little kids just like wanting to upload like another Facebook album, like as if there wasn't more to life. Like that's just like all we did at the time. But I feel like maybe after eight, so I did photography for my A-levels. And then I think it's then when I really started to appreciate it. Like I said, like I used to be obsessed with America's Next Top Model. So like all I knew was from that. But when I did my A-level, like I started learning about different photographers like Henri Cartier-Bresson and like just learning what photography like really is and like appreciating it as like a technique, so to speak. And then after sixth form, I got my first job as a studio assistant, and they were doing loads of like campaign shoots, and then like I saw it in real life, and then I think that's when I think I like started like fashion-y, so to speak. Like my first publications were fashion, and then I just kind of realized that, you know, like fashion is, as much as I love it, like it's too like surface level for me. Like I just need a lot more. I need to like get more from it. Yeah, so I feel like that was around like 2019, and then it just became a lot more personal.
You mentioned before not having a degree and not going to university. Is a lot of what you developed from post-school on the job kind of experience?
Yeah. So I was actually supposed to take a gap year, and I'm like technically still on my gap year, but like I don't know if that counts because it's been a couple years.
Is that the line you tell family?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm still on my gap year, just wait, let me just travel and then I'll go to uni. But yeah, so I left sixth form with the intention of going on a gap year. So I left sixth form like July, August came, and my mum was like, you need to get a job. And I'm like, babe, I'm on a gap year, this isn't what people do. And she was like, I literally don't care, get a job or get out of my house. I was like, cool. So I got an internship at this little studio in Northampton, had like a trial day. They were like, great, you've got the internship. I was there for 3 months, then got offered a job, and then was there for 3 years. And yeah, and learned everything I knew there, essentially.
I think that kind of links into the kind of artist advice that I want to include in this week's conversation. And it's this idea of there not being a particular end goal, and it's more of a fluid kind of developing your practice. So this week's top tip comes from Joey Yu, an illustrator and animator who's from London, and she's worked with The New York Times, The Guardian and The Tate, to name a few. She wanted us to share these words, which are: creativity is an exploration rather than an end goal. Allow yourself to be flexible. I would also say it's important to make sure you cultivate at least some of your practice offline, finding inspiration in your surroundings, the people around you, and conversations, rather than being reliant on the internet. In whatever industry you're in, leaning into the personal is always the most interesting. Those are just some brilliant words, and we've already talked about how important it is for you to reflect upon the personal to find inspiration. Can we talk about the project that you did with your family over lockdown?
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, you were unable to celebrate Eid because of the restrictions that were in place. And then that prompted you to seek out a creative opportunity, really. Yeah. I'll hand over to you at this point.
So, like, I remember, like, at the beginning of lockdown, I was talking to my friend Josh, who's also an artist, and even one of my friend Joe, who's, like, into music, and I was just like, are you in, like, a creative block? And they were like, yeah, like, I'm struggling, man. And I was like, okay, good. Like, I'm glad, I know I'm not the only one. But then, like, Josh was just producing work, like, left, right and centre. And I was like, damn, like, I still haven't got that. Like, what the hell? And I saw, like, loads of people doing Zoom photo shoots. And I was like, oh, these are really cool. But also, like, some of them just, like, didn't look like they were online. Some of them looked like real photos. And I was like, what the hell? But, like, one, I don't want to do what everyone else is doing, because like I felt like all the Zoom photo shoots were like completely the same. And two, I was like, I just don't think that makes sense for anything that I want to do. Like, I couldn't make it work in my head. So I was like, well, you know, like, I'm back to work now, I'll just let whatever happens happen. And then, so my mum's Muslim and my dad is Catholic, so we celebrate both festivities, and Eid was coming. And so I'd actually like moved out of my family home at the beginning of the pandemic, which was a rookie error. I do not recommend it to anyone.
I was going to say, but that was a challenge.
It was not fun. Like, my mum was dropping food around like every single week, because I was like, there's no food in the shops. But yeah, so Eid came and see, like, normally we'd have like a really nice meal together, but we couldn't do that. And so I kind of thought as a like alternative, and also like I've never shot my parents before. Like I very much, well, I've shot my mum, but that's all very like no face, no case kind of thing. Like I feel as personal as I make my work, I want to kind of have some privacy within like my family. So I was like, oh, like I've never shot them.
Yeah, which is understandable.
Yeah. And I remember one time like my cousin asked me like, how comes you never take pictures of your family? Like, don't you think that like we're good enough? And I was like, oh my God, like that's not the case, like at all. Like,
you're almost too good.
Yeah, literally. I was like, you guys are my prized possession. So yeah, so I just like to my parents, like, how would you feel if like I just took some pictures? Like literally I had no plans for it essentially at the beginning. I was like, it'll just be like fun. I got them to dress up in like my favorite clothes. I've got like a backdrop in my house. So I got them to set it up, like we set up like a little mini tripod thing and just like did it over FaceTime. And I decorated my mantelpiece in my room with like little bits that reminded me of my parents. It just like reminded me of like my idea of like home. And it was really nice. Like we just had like a really good time. And it was really funny because when I first proposed the idea, my mum was like, oh no, like, I don't really want to do it. Oh, Ruby, like, do you really need us to do it? And by the end, like, she was absolutely loving it. And I was like, look at you having a good time.
That is so hard to believe from the pictures that I've seen.
Honestly.
Because I was going to say, they are, like, so up for it. They are so dressed up. They're having the best time. And from the outset, when I started looking into your work, one of my main questions was going to be, how easy was it to convince your parents to do it? Because they look like they're having a blast.
Oh, my God, no. Like, my mum was the hardest one. And I remember, like, she came out with an outfit. And I was like, oh, no, I want you to wear the other pink one. She was like, Ruby, like, you're really pissing me off. Now I've got to go and change. And just like, this has taken so long, like, just like, not happy. She was just like, huffing and puffing. And I was like, bloody hell, this is going to be a, this is going to take a while. Whereas my dad, who was the vainest man I know, was like, so do you want me to do another outfit change? Or like, so should I do a close up now? I'm like, wait your turn. Like, let's get mum involved first. But no, it was really fun. Like, I really enjoy doing it with them. And like, I love the pictures like so much. And so like, it's kind of turned into like an ongoing project, which is currently on hold. But I want to do it with like the rest of my family, because like, I still haven't seen anyone in a year. And like, two of my cousins have just given birth to two beautiful girls. And like, I'm yet to meet them. So I really want to do it like properly with like everyone. And all Nigerians have massive families, so I feel like it's going to take me a while to find everyone. But I'm like determined to do like my whole family tree eventually.
The pictures are so clear. Like, I was just shocked that that came through someone's Zoom, you know, that someone's Zoom could, one, be so clear.
Honestly, same. Same. Like, I'm like a bit baffled to how well it worked, but like, I was just like, I'm just gonna go with it.
And I also really enjoy that we can kind of see you in the top right corner against a wall, camera in hand.
Oh yeah.
But that's really nice, I think, that that's included, because it kind of demonstrates that you're there taking part in something with them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It was like a group effort.
So where's the best place for people to find your work, Ruby?
I would say my website, www.rubysamuel.com, or on Instagram, rubysamuel.
Cool. I think, yeah, the two projects that we spoke about in particular, Omo Nigeria and the one that you shot with your family, I think are brilliant. And it's interesting knowing that they took place in kind of different parts of, well, pre-COVID and post-COVID.
Yeah.
So as we start to kind of wrap up the conversation, I want to find out, be a little bit retrospective, really, and ask you, if you were to look back on what you've achieved so far, if you could, what advice would you go back and give yourself when you first started pursuing a creative career?
So my friend's parents that I was telling you about earlier sent me an article a couple of months ago, and it was called The Gap Between Having Good Taste and Doing Good. And essentially, it was just saying that in order to close that gap, you just need to keep producing work. So part of me would kind of give myself the advice, you know, just be consistent and keep going, like keep producing, because, you know, practice essentially makes perfect. But then the other part of me is very much like, don't shoot unless it's cute. Like, don't do it if it doesn't feel right. Like, I feel like there's always pressure, not pressure, but it's obviously good to keep practicing, and that's the only way that you get better at doing something. But I also think it's really important to kind of hone down on your craft and find what it is in particular that you like. Don't just shoot everything for shooting's sake just to get good, but find your niche and then like work hard on that, I would say.
Where do you feel that you are at in terms of finding that niche?
Oh God. I feel like I've...
For yourself, obviously.
Yeah. I feel like I'm nearly there. I feel like I know exactly what I want to do. I just haven't put it all into photographs, so to speak. Mm. So I feel like I'm en route, if that makes sense. It's all up in my noggin, but not out to the world yet.
Well, as we talk about moving forward, just quickly, I mean, you've been tipped as someone that's destined for big things in 2021 by, I think it's Manju magazine.
Oh my God, I know.
Which champions emerging creative talent across Africa. That's incredible. But does that add a sense of like pressure and expectation?
It does times 100. Like I honestly, like I'm obviously so grateful for the recognition, but I had no idea. Like I literally just like checked my phone, had so many new followers. I'm just thinking, what's going on? And then I saw it, and it was on ID magazine as well, which is obviously such a huge platform. But I was like, what the hell? Like, literally, like, overnight success, really randomly. And, like, again, like, obviously, I'm so, so grateful for the recognition. But then I'm like, shit, I need to get to work.
Yeah.
I need to, you know, now that I'm seen as hot, like, I need to be hot. But also, like, it's good pressure, I guess. Like, I think I needed a kick up the butt to continue shooting and just kind of get back into it, because like I said, like with work, just getting a lot, like I've been focusing on that and kind of putting my photography to the side. So I just needed something else to be like, no, this is what you need to do and you need to do it now.
Last question, what do you hope the next year will hold for you?
Oh God, I hope for time. So time to... Well, I feel bad saying time, because I feel like in this bloody pandemic, all we had is time. But like, it's not the same when like you've got nothing.
It's a different type. It's a different type.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not the same when you've just got nothing to do. So like, I would really like time to actually think, time to actually create, time to travel, time to develop my craft, time to network. Just time to actually just execute ideas and make things happen.
Ruby, thank you so much for taking part in the podcast, answering my broad questions.
Thank you.
And letting me also like nitpick at little things along the way. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I've had such a good time. Thank you so much.
I want to say thank you again to Ruby for coming on the podcast and bringing a completely new perspective. Please, please go and check out her work on her website, rubysamuel.com. We'll also put a link on our link tree, so do check it out. Now, there won't be an episode next week as it's Easter weekend, and we hope you'll all be having a lovely long weekend with friends and family. But we'll be back again on Sunday, the 11th of April, with the second half of the series. I've been your host, Connor. Ella's been your producer. And until then, take care.